and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris, and you're watching The Future's Female. This is the show where we find the extraordinary in every woman. Now, the institutionalization of children, that is, that children raised in institutions like orphanages and children's homes, is probably one of the most negative legacies that the world is still working to reverse. Now, a lot of what scientists know about parental bonding and the brain comes from studies of children who spent time in Romanian orphanages in the 1980s and 1990s. Now, tonight on the show, we're going to discuss deinstitutionalization, which is essentially the process of reforming childcare systems and children's institutions, finding new placements for children currently resident, as well as setting up replacement services to support vulnerable families in non-institutional ways. Joining me on the show tonight, we have Datin Ilya Lim Abdullah. She's one of the trustees at Orphan Care, which is a non-profit foundation that aims to give institutionalized children and unplanned at-risk newborn babies the joy of growing up in a family. Datin Ilya, welcome to the show. It's good to have you here.
Thank you very much for inviting.
Now, I love this ethos that Orphan Care has, that no child should be denied family life because of circumstances. And I'm so keen to know more about the work that Orphan Care does in line with this ethos.
All right. I guess I need to go back a little bit in history and to mention a little bit how we started. Mm. It was really by, in a way, you know, when we talk about deinstitutionalization, or DI for short.
It's a big word, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it is. it also, you know, it's sort of like, wow, what a coincidence for us, because about in 2008, when Orphan Care was registered, the two objectives that our late founder had was, number one, was to actually take children out of orphanages and to, you know, be adopted by families, loving families. And secondly, we wanted to build a hatch, a baby hatch, which was at that time not, you know, well, it was one of those projects that got swept under the carpet. Mm.
You're absolutely right. The baby hatch. I mean, we've all read news reports about that, and it does come with a lot of, you know, it opens up conversations about
yes.
morality, and there's a certain
true.
Stigma that comes with society. Mm. We want to touch on that during this conversation, okay. But I do want to understand DI a bit better, deinstitutionalization. Help me understand what that means. Mm. Who's in institutional care currently? These children. Who are they? Where are they from? And where are they currently at?
Okay, I think maybe I should talk about what's happening in Malaysia.
Mm.
I think 90% of the children have parents. I need to start with that. So
90%
of children
in
institutional care actually have parents. If not both, one at least. And we too, you know, when we learned about all this, we were rather shocked, because as we all knew from the past, when you talk about an orphanage, it's basically equals orphan,
right?
Or the other way around. And orphan means orphanage. You will find them in orphanages, but that was not the case. And through our work that started in 2012, We discovered that what we were doing, essentially taking children, wanting to put them back into a new family, not understanding that they already actually have their own biological families
right.
nearby or far. So we thought that we would be doing that kind of work. But in the end, we realized, after linking up with another NGO in UK, we discovered that, yes, there's so many children also the same in Malaysia mm. who have got parents or family, you know, and yet they are living in institutional care.
Why know. Are they living? Why can't the families take care of them?
I think it's not difficult to say that, you know, most times it is because of poverty and difficult life for them, and also because of the fact that some of them they don't want to let the child to be adopted, so they think that placing them in a home, especially those government homes, that, you know, it will be like, oh, it's a saving grace for them, you know, like, you know, you can put your child there, they'll be taken care of.
They are, you know, guaranteed food and shelter.
Shelter, education.
Right.
Everything, the
so
whole works.
So they think they're giving up their child to something better, to a better future.
Exactly. Especially where, you know, most of us, you know, we know that education is important. Mm. So, you know, once you tackle that part, I think they'll say that, wow,
so poverty being one of the main reasons a child is separated from their parent. Can I understand a little bit more about the childcare institutions that we have at the moment? Orphanages in Malaysia, child homes, who runs them? Are they private? Okay. Are they government run?
There are 64,000 children living in homes in Malaysia. Now that statistic is about 6 years old.
Six years ago, we had 64,000.
That's right. And so you can imagine the numbers would have gone up.
Mm.
Because the law hasn't actually been, you know, put down that, you know, children should not live in institutions. But we're all working towards that, slowly, gently, with the government.
Okay.
The types of homes available, if we look at the government ones, they've got rumah kanak-kanak, which are actually homes for the children.
Okay.
And they have it for two ages, you know, one from birth to, say, 12, and then the other one would be from 13 onwards
ages.
To 18. And also they do have homes for males and females.
Oh, it's segregated.
Yes,
okay.
Segregation. But there are some, they have the home, like they have both sexes, but in different buildings.
Okay.
So in the government, they have, you know, homes like this for children. At the same time, they also have homes for the old people and also the disabled.
Sorry. Okay, I was about to ask whether, you know, these children, are they, you corrected my misconception that they are without parents, so 90% of them still have a parent at least. And there are physically and mentally disabled homes taking care for children with physical and mental disabilities.
Yes.
Okay. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but let's come back and continue this conversation on the Futures Female. So much more to cover about deinstitutionalization. Stay tuned, we'll be right back. Thank you so much for staying with me, Melissa Idris, on The Futures Female. I'm chatting tonight to Datin Ilya Lim Abdullah. She's one of the trustees at Orphan Care, a non-profit which believes that children should grow up in a family environment. We're talking about deinstitutionalization, taking children out of childcare institutions and giving them perhaps the opportunity, the joy of growing up with a family. Now, the institutions, they're not necessarily bad places. They're trying to do the best they can with the resources they have. Sometimes size of the institution matters. There's a lot of children at one in one premise. Can you talk to me a little bit about the current situation of our child institutions?
Well, I mean, as what you said, it is correct that, you know, these institutions, the people who manage them, they have the very best of intentions. Mm. And they have resources. It is because the misconception of what, you know, living in homes has made people, Malaysians in general, they too think that it's good to have children in homes because otherwise they will not be with, you know, with their families. So because of that, there's always this issue of, you know, the support. You know, it's not intentional, but it's there. People are generally very helpful, so they support these homes.
Okay, so unwittingly providing. So I'm thinking about every time during Ramadan, bulan puasa, there's always lots of
donations
with the best intentions funneled towards rumah anak yatim, funneled towards these orphanages, which in a way actually provides them more resources to keep them running.
Keep them. Yeah,
but what
exactly.
We want to try and do is to take children out of these institutions and give them a home. Ilya, what is the impact of to children growing up in an institutionalized setting?
As you said, you know, earlier on, you know, scientific evidence, you know, scientists have worked on it for more than 60 years. And, you know, working on the brain development of a baby and up to the point when they are, you know, matured adults. And the serious harm is very evident. And especially the lack of secure, you know, attachment and all that.
Right.
So I think essentially that is the evil of all this separation, whereby, you know, a child doesn't get to be loved and given attention, the sense of belonging. So these almost, you know, 9 out of 10 cases, when you look at a difficult child or a troubled child, it always points back to their childhood.
Right, yeah. It has an impact.
There is an impact.
You know, I came across some really shocking statistics of children raised in institutions. As you said, the one that struck me the most was 90% of them had at least one living parent. Children living in or raised in institutions are 40 times more likely to have a criminal record, 500 times more likely than their peers to commit suicide. And I think we're doing our children a disservice if we don't recognize these shocking statistics.
Yes.
How do we then help to transition? You know, we mentioned sometimes we have all the best intentions, not knowing the repercussions, unintended consequences of them. How do we help transition children in institutions to perhaps in, you know, living in families or at least community-based care?
This is really a very important issue. You know, helping the children without helping the adults who look after them for the wrong reasons, that is really the problem. You know, we need Malaysia, you know, we are doing the same thing as what Europe has done, but Europe probably has got reasons of why children are separated because due to wars and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But in Malaysia, there's nothing of that. But it's because of our economy in a way, you know, we need to work with the government, which we do. But it is one of those issues. Poverty is not wiped out yet. So as long as there is poverty, there will be children put into institutions.
So aims or objectives of deinstitutionalizations or DI, is to return children to their existing families, at least one of the parents.
Yes, okay, maybe I should say that, okay, just to add on a little bit about what you asked me just now, I think how do we help is really through education and awareness, and this is where, you know, you know, often care is facing a lot of challenges because we need to do advocacy.
Mm.
We really need that, and we need to do awareness and, you know, communication through the media to make the general public understand, and also the government to really reinforce their intentions to help to take to remove children from institutional, you know, living. And you know, essentially, it is true education, yeah.
Okay.
And yes, and you were saying the question that you just asked was
whether you would like those children to be returned to the homes.
Now, under deinstitutionalization, essentially, when you institutionalize, that is the bad thing.
Mm.
When you deinstitutionalize, you bring them out. You bring them out. But when you bring them out, what are the options? So basically, what I want to share with you is that under deinstitutionalization, there are 5 components. Number one is a process called reintegration. So under reintegration, you have it as back into the biological families. And the second kind of reintegration is when they are not available, they can be considered to go back to their extended family.
Okay.
So that's 2 out of 5. And the third one is outright adoption, which is what everyone knows about, and a lot of people are doing it legally or illegally. Often care does that, working very closely with the government.
Mm.
And then the fourth one is foster care. The concept of foster care is not yet well cemented here in Malaysia, but
in an American setting, in a very Western-centric setting, which I learned from watching TV and movies.
Same.
Is that the same in Malaysia? Is foster care the same? Does that work the same way here in Malaysia?
Okay, currently, Melissa, foster care, if you ask the government, the Ministry of Women, what they say, they will say that they do foster care. But the foster care that they are referring to is actually the 2 years that this little baby whom this couple wants to adopt gets a court order to live with this couple for 2 years before the baby is officially adopted. That period, 2 years, is pre-adoption.
It's like a test-run adoption, is it?
They call it foster care, which, of course, we cannot argue with that. But in terms of what we are wanting to work with the government to establish in the near future, is a foster care that you are not that wrong, and me too, because we grew up watching all that. It's a foster care system whereby we look at the other possibilities, other, you know, childcare systems whereby it can support. If, for example, if a child cannot be adopted, can the child be fostered? Yes. If a child cannot be reintegrated, can the child be fostered? Yes. And we talk about many kinds of fostering, foster care, because there are at least about 9 types: respite foster care, temporary, permanent. You can have very specialized foster care, but it's always in support of the child to ensure that the child does not get back into an institution.
Okay, that's really fascinating. I didn't realize there were so many different types of foster care. We're going to take another quick break, but we'll come back and continue this conversation on The Futures Female. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to The Futures Female. I'm Melissa Idris. With me tonight is Dathin Ilya Lim Abdullah from Foster Care Foundation. So just before the break, we talked about transitioning children out of institutions, so the process of deinstitutionalization. You mentioned five components. We had 2 types of reintegration: adoption, fostering. What's the fifth one?
The fifth one is is called small group homes, whereby this is the only exception that we who do DI work will basically support. It's essentially very useful because we're talking about a group of 5 or 6 children who are very seriously disabled, and they need like 24 hours care.
They need special care.
Yes, special care. And then what we do is we would love to see them in a small settings, you know, whereby they can get attention. And we encourage the parents or families to always come in and spend time with the child, so that the child, whether or not he can hear or feel, but I'm sure there's a little bond there that's coming through.
At least some kind of closer attachment. You talked a little bit about, you know, working closely with the ministry to try and get more education awareness, changing the way, you know, policy is shaped around children in institutions. What, you know, working with orphan care, what has been your biggest challenge in trying to make sure that Malaysia is working in a way where we have adopted deinstitutionalization as a core policy?
Wow, that too is so important. You know, there are a few challenges, and I think personally, I can't say for the rest, but I think the government is a big challenge. Although they had the Child Act Law 2001 amended to support family-based care, they were not very keen to use the word DI. Because it means closing up homes. Now, when you can understand that there's 64,000 or more children in homes in Malaysia, it would not be easy, isn't it, to close up their homes like.
So there is a negative connotation attached, or a perception attached to the idea of closing orphanages. I'm thinking of the big bad banker trying to close up an orphanage, you know, in the most cartoon sense, but perhaps not understanding the impact of what growing up in institutions do to children.
The government does understand that. They've been in action. You know, JKM, we talk about the social welfare department, they understand the harm that every child goes to living. However, it is policies, it is willfulness, it is willingness to change the existing system that has been there for more than 60 years. Mm. So, you know, asking them to now change their mindset is difficult. To change their system is difficult. And to do deinstitutionalization is systemic. You need to go through, it's almost like, you know, like a drug going through our blood system to make us feel good and understand why DI is so important for children.
Okay. You know, I do also want to touch on the Baby Hatch program, which Orphan Care, there's an initiative under Orphan Care. And I want to talk to you about working with this program, helping without discrimination, mm-hmm. without judgment. And mm-hmm. I think often when we talk about Baby Hatch programs, the conversation skews that way. How does Orphan Care do it in a non-judgmental way?
Well, then again, history. When we built the first hatch in 2010, there are, you know, responses positive and negative. And obviously the negative ones came from authorities, you know, religious authorities. However, it took at least about 2-3 years for us to convince them that, look, you know, whether or not we have a hatch, they're still going to make babies out there. Mm. And we are just a safety net here. Why are we wanting an innocent child born out of wedlock to die? And, you know, it's sinful. So then we got the support of some mufti in Malaysia. And after that, it's been plain sailing occasionally.
So how do you provide help? So you not just for the baby, which is often, you know, without documentation, may struggle trying to find papers and may have the stigma of being stateless. How do you help the baby? How do you help the mother? Okay. How does that work?
Well, definitely, the minute the baby is put in our hatch, everything is set on, you know. So the person who leaves the baby there, we can only see her hands or his hands.
Oh, it's anonymous.
Yes, it is. We pledged that. And the minute a baby is put on the bassinet, the alarm goes off, the aircon comes on, the light comes on, and the CCTV is on. So, you know, so no one will know the identity of the mother. Okay. So, and then when you put the baby in there, it's shut, it's one way. You know, you can't actually reverse it. So if a mother finds that she wants to, you know, she's in doubt, there's a bell there for her to ring. And so we sort it out. Yes. And we have documents, papers, forms for them to fill in, because we explain to them that if you put your name and your IC, we'll be able to know that your child is Malaysian. And when your child is Malaysian, it's easier to adopt. But unfortunately, there'll be cases where obviously they're not Malaysians, but sometimes they do put in a sign to say that this child is of a different faith. And then some write little notes to say, I prefer my child to be adopted by a Hindu family. So we must respect that. We must also, you know, sort of like remind people that Orphan Care, it's not a Muslim NGO, nor, you know, we are there for everyone. Okay. We do
inclusive.
Not. Yes, it's very inclusive.
You know, we could go on talking about this for another hour or so. Unfortunately, we've run out of time, but I do want to say that this is a conversation I hope to continue on The Future's Female. There's a lot to unpack and uncover and discuss. And I myself personally was educated just in the process of this research and talking to you. Thank you so much for being on the show tonight.
Thank you very much, Melissa. Thank you.
That's all the time we have on this episode of The Future's Female. I will be back with you same time next week. Thank you so much for watching, folks, and good night.